No, but we have an awesome guest today, Mr. Dalton Jensen. Dalton, could you give us a brief bio, a little background on yourself?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Head of sales at Dirty Dough. I do a podcast myself that you both have been on. And
The Thinking Project.
The Thinking Project, yep.
And how many listeners does that have?
Over 500,000.
You think so that far? A guy that is a podcast host would not hit the table during a podcast?
I don't cut anything. My podcast is a little different.
Yeah.
I don't cut anything out.
500,000. How did you get up to 500,000 listeners?
Wait, you have 500,000 listeners?
Yeah.
He needs to give us a shout out.
All the 200, what? Like the 2.5 years. Yeah. It's like over 2.5
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah. But 500,000.
Like per episode, audio episode is like probably 10,000 a month or something like that.
Dude,
yeah,
killing it.
It's crazy. Yeah.
That's how we met.
Yeah, that is how we met. And I tell everybody that because they're like, how did you get in with Dirty Dough? I was like, interviewed the owner on my podcast.
Yeah.
And they don't believe me. They're like, no, but really? Like, what networking event? What mastermind do you pay for? I was like, no, actually, I did it. So, no, answer your question. I think what you guys are doing, like being really consistent and talking about stuff that people care about.
What do you mostly talk about on your podcast?
It's a how-to. So I really got the... So if you look at my chart, it's like... dead until I did a little rebranding to like how to. And so now it's like in the how to category. So we talk about like the story, right? Because my favorite thing about the Thinking Project is when you get those people on, there's just so many different ways to make money. People don't realize it. And so that, so the whole thesis is like to think, right? Like, cause you can make money if you want to, you're just not, you haven't been exposed. And so the Thinking Project is exposure. Like, so it's how do you do certain things in business and then exposing you to new ideas so that you can think about what you have in front of you to make money.
And why did you start that?
Yeah. So there's two reasons I started it. The biggest reason was I was in car sales at the time, and car sales has the stigma, right? If you're a bad salesman in any industry, it's like they compare you to used car salesmen. Mm-hmm. So yep, the right. the two people they hate the most are attorneys and used car salesmen. So,
and door to door,
maybe door to door, but no, I was trying to break out of that industry, out of the car world. And two things happened. I was like trying to reach out to people on LinkedIn and Facebook. And I was like, hey, can I take you to lunch? Hey, can I do this? And everybody told me no. And then I listened to Gary Vee just on social media. And he said that the key to networking was to create spaces where people wanted to be, like a party that no one wanted to miss out on. And at that time, like 2.5 years ago when I created the podcast, there wasn't a ton, like Joe Rogan had just got bought by Spotify and all these things. And so it just was like, there wasn't a whole bunch, at least in my network. And so I was like, well, I'll just start a podcast. And the funniest thing happened because a month later, I was like, I'm going to do a podcast. I'm going to invite people on. And I went back to those same people who didn't go to lunch with me. And they were like, and I was like, do you want to come tell your story on a podcast? And they're absolutely.
They're like, yeah, I want a platform.
So everybody that wasn't going to let me ask them questions at lunch, let me ask them questions on a podcast, and that was it.
Dude,
but at the end of the day, like, I actually feel like I'm helping other people. Like, so much has come from it. But like, you're helping other businesses get their message out there, and then having them start their own podcast is great because it's just like music, right? Like everybody listens to more than one podcast anyway. So it doesn't matter whose else is out there.
That was another reason why these guys told me to start a podcast. They said, if you're going to be a guest on so many other podcasts at the end, which we need to start doing in our podcast,
plug it.
How do we connect with Dalton? Right. And then, and that's, everybody says that to me. How do we, Bennett, tell us how to connect? And then it's like, so I created a website, but now on that website, it also has my podcast.
Heck yeah.
You know, so I could say, go check us out on Deeper Than Dough or my website, whatever. Where before I couldn't really redirect that, their audience. Mm-hmm. To me.
Yeah.
But now I can now that we have a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just captures people. It's like top of the funnel, middle of the funnel stuff that just people get in. Because when they look up like Dirty Dough, right? Or they look up anything and they see an ad, right? So like they see an ad, people have to do all the shadow work behind the scenes. So they'll see Dirty Dough ad and then they'll be like, well, what is this? And if they type Dirty Dough into the Google search and they see a million podcast episodes, they can go listen.
Yep.
And that's a parasocial relationship. And now we've got them because, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but like you've got them now because there's trust built.
Attention.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that you can do. So it's also just like brand awareness and like stability. And like, if you type in my name in Google, I'm the first one that comes up, which is nice. It's not anything famous, but like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but if somebody types in my name, they'll find me and they'll be like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can follow you.
Yeah.
And you've done such a good job on your personal brand on the podcast. How, diving into the deeper than dough.
Yeah.
What's the why behind it? You kind of went to like, I want to connect with more people to learn more business skills, if I heard you right. Keep going.
Yeah. So actually that just got realized with a thing that had taken me a while to do, but it allowed me to go back to my hometown. So in my hometown, I've told this story a million times, but it's super funny and it just illustrates this small town thinking. So I grew up in a town, like 8,000 people. If you're a boy, you ended up in a farmer factory. And if you're a girl, you ended up in HR or like a mom or whatever, right? And that's like a generalization, but like we were poor. Like we were 90% of the schools were on, 90% of the students in my hometown were on free or reduced lunch. Most of my friends, we all knew what food stamps were. And I had gone through school. I actually got suspended one time in school because there was an a la carte, like snack place, and they were selling snacks. And I was like, oh, well, I could buy those from Walmart's for cheaper, sell them to you for cheaper and still make money. And so I was like undercutting the school's a la carte. And so I was just did stuff like that, like hustled and things like that. And, you know, at the end of high school, when they do the most likely to awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I tell you this story?
No.
It's,
where is this, by the way?
It's Keokuk, Iowa. So like Southeast Iowa, super poor. But there was like one time, like TJ Maxx and these guys, they take store pulls and they resell them, like Nordstrom's Rack and stuff.
Yeah.
So I had a friend who had like a bunch of ties and he was like, they're all store pulls. Like you can have, like, he didn't even make me pay for it. They were a nuisance to him. So he was like, here, take like 10 buckets of ties. And I was like, cool. So I just literally put a pop-up stand up next to this really nice bank. And next to, in my hometown, there was a LDS temple. So I put two stands up next to there and just started peddling ties. And people were like, you got those for free. How do you feel good charging people? I was like,
it's a business.
Yeah. Bro. I was like, they're buying. So anyway, long story short, the why behind the podcast, I do that's my hometown. And that's still to this day, the hometown that I grew up in. And 6 months ago, two of the really big factories in my hometown shut down and it cost the town around 1,000 jobs. And in a town with 8,000 people, that's huge. Devastating.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So I reached out to the high school there and I do a scholarship and it's not like a normal scholarship, right? Where you like read a book, write an essay or like convince me, right? There's a 4-week challenge. So the first challenge is the rejection challenge. So you got to go through, you got to go a whole week and see how many times you can get rejected. Like you just got to do crazy stuff.
Rejected on what? Yeah.
Anything. Can I have $100? Can I have a discount? Can I get 10% off? Will you go out with me? Whatever, right? Like you got to get no's. And whoever comes back with the most no's wins that week.
Wow.
So you got to get, and you got to like track them and we got to prove it. And there's other stuff.
Are there rules for like, they can't be too outrageous? I mean, it has to be reasonable.
You just have to get a no.
Oh, damn.
And the idea is like to get really comfortable with people telling you no.
Right.
And then just realizing too that it won't kill you because that's what I felt like. So anyway, that was like, then there's three other challenges that are really cool, but like, that's the why I wanted to go back to my hometown to tell people like, it's actually not a con artist. You can start a business there and support local you know, you don't need to worry about these big factories. Right. Cause I was pitching it and I was like, what if somebody had listened to my podcast who was at one of those factories? And they said, you know what? We don't need this factory to have a job. All of us can band together. We can use our resources and then we can go, right? That's one of the other challenges.
And it's a different way of thinking of like, oh, I need a secure 9-to-5 job.
Right.
It's like, no, I need a secure job that I pay myself.
Yeah.
By building a company that provides me revenue like that.
Yeah.
I'm scared of a 9-to-5 job. Never had one, but I'm scared of it because I'm like, well, what if I don't enjoy it? And then I'm trapped.
Yeah, you're sucked in for sure.
And then I guess the bigger worry is, you know, what if they fire me?
Right.
Right. But I don't think of that. I'm like, they're not going to fire me.
No.
I'm good.
Well, and it's just like if 2020 taught us anything, it was that nobody was safe.
I'm always thinking of the next thing, right? What are you going to do after Dirty Dome? Like, man, what a resume that you built. I've never been in franchise sales. I came on as the first franchise salesman. 3 months later, when did you come on? We were at like 90, right? That was like...
Yeah, something like that. 60, 90, something like that.
Maybe 60.
I can't remember.
Something like that. Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, right around there. Yeah.
For sure, less than 100.
Yeah.
Not only did you come on as a salesperson, within a week, you were training another person. And then 2 weeks, you're training another person. Then you're head of sales. And in 3 months, that's all it's been, right? Three, maybe four?
Maybe four. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe four.
And we went from, I mean, you put on 170 franchises.
Yeah.
It usually takes an average company, you know, years to do. You've done it in a few months with no experience because you're a freaking hustler, which is cool because that, talking about that progression, like, man, that should give you confidence going forward. Talking about job security, like, go and say, hey, I built that for Dirty Dough. Let me build that for you.
Yeah. Well, and it's,
you know,
just
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah. It gives me goosebumps, man, because it's just like, that's what I wanted to give those high schoolers is. So another one of the challenges, and I've never played it, but I didn't know about this until I moved to Utah, but everybody in Utah plays it, but like the Bigger or Better.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like you go door to door and Bigger or Better and it's like a Wednesday night thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's cool though.
It's a Monday night.
Oh, bro. Is it a Monday night?
No, it's mutual.
Mutual. That's what Wednesday night, right?
I was thinking family night.
Yeah. So I was like, that's cool. But the big one is the $5 challenge. Uh-huh. So from the book, What I Wish I Knew When I Was 20, the goal is that, so there's two rules to the $5 challenge. You get $5, all profit must come from the $5 and all future transactions must come from the revenue of the $5. And it's this, but the cool, here's the trick though, that I didn't tell any of the kids. So we've done it once, we're doing it again, but here's the trick that I didn't tell any of the kids. The $5 is actually a crutch. Mm-hmm. The $5 is actually a huge limitation. And the people who win always like
they didn't
put the $5 aside.
They pull it out of nothing.
Yeah. They go from zero. So, but you still have $5. Right. And that's cool. But like being able to just like, yeah. I mean, when the company, that last company let me go, I can't say the name, but when the last company let me go, I was like, I was actually so relieved. I was like, oh, this is sick. I was like, they're like, I had people reach out. Are you going to be okay? I was like, absolutely. Cause I know how to sell, doc.
Yeah.
We'll be fine.
Talk about job security.
Yeah.
Especially when you've done commission sales, right?
Yeah. 100%.
It's like, what company is not going to want to hire me when I go up and say, hey, if I get X amount of dollars in your pocket, just give me some kickback. If I don't make any money, then you don't have to pay me. Like, where's the risk?
None.
The risk is not on the business. It's on me. But man, I'm a confident salesperson. I'm going to sell.
Yeah, we're going to go out there, dude.
So I know my ability.
That's the deeper than dough for me. It's like, you just get all of these experiences. You never have to worry. Like, we're good.
Yeah. I mean talking about like mentality and like what helps you deal with stress and anxiety. Well, where does that stress and anxiety come from? Well, it's like a lot of it could be job security or financial security. I don't need those A-holes to pay me, bro.
I would never, but it's just nice. It's like you get to, and what a lot of people do. So I personally, I love 9-to-5s. I love being on a sales team. I love having my side stuff too. So I always make sure, like, you know, when we met, right, I was like, I have my podcast. I don't want to give that up. You're like, cool, as long as you sell. And I was like, music to my ears, because as long as we get shit done, we're good, right?
Right.
But I like that because people, you know, people can do whatever they want. They can do what makes them happy, but you need to be like, you got to play the game. So like I learned sales in the car world, not necessarily from selling cars, but because I found out one day I was a buddy with the GM and I overheard him say that they had a training budget that they weren't going to use that year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are you talking? So I pretended like I didn't hear him. And I was like, whatever. I came back the next day and I was like, hey boss, I just was talking to my team and we're getting really down. We really use some training. And I found this Grant Cardone seminar that we can go to.
Uh-huh.
And it was all about cars because Grant Cardone
was huge on the cars.
Yeah, that was his first job. His first job was cars, and then he went from there. So I was like, all about cars. What do you think? He's like, how much is it? And I was like, it's $10,000. All of us will go. And he was like, all right, deal. And I was like, how do you like? That was it because he knew he had to spend it or else he was going to lose it, and he couldn't spend it anywhere else. It had to be for training. And so I was like, that was it. So I learned how to sell. I did that a few times. So you can leverage your 9-to-5. Most of them have training budgets. So you can go like, go get the skill, bro.
Yeah. And I think that's a big shift that's happening is that it's not so much 9-to-5. It's just get your shit done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of those tech companies now, they don't give you vacation days. A lot of them don't have set hours. It's just get your job done.
Josh, mm-hmm. who was just in here, the VP of production.
Yeah.
He was asking me that maybe a month ago. He's like, what's your policy on paid time off? And I was like, we don't have a policy. He's like, is it like unlimited within reason or in a certain amount of days? I was like, we don't have a policy. He goes, that means that's unlimited within reason. I was like, okay, well, that's our policy, dude. Like, just get your shit done.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, like, I don't know. I don't want to be a company that people are like, oh, I have to work 80-hour weeks. Yeah. It's like, well, that's cool for me as the business owner. Like, I pay this guy the same.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, you have to have a balanced life.
Yeah.
And that was a big shift because I'm like, no, I want people to work more, more, more. And then I'm like, wait, but when I work a more balanced life, I have higher production. I'm sure other people have higher production. And then they want to work for me rather than like, oh, crap, I have to show up. So, and especially with sales, it's your attitudes, everything. You know, if you're hiring salespeople, you don't want them to overwork themselves because then they're not freaking excited to talk to people.
Yeah, exactly. They feel like they get burnt out real easy. But, you know, I think... So if you have that balance, if you have good salespeople too, like, I don't know, man, I love the idea that, you know, we can empathize with people, but I've experienced burnout. But whenever I experience burnout, like for me, it's always been like, find quick wins to get out of burnout because I don't get burned out if I close a big deal.
Let's talk about that. But I want to phrase it more in the mental health aspect.
All right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
What is a burnout? Yeah, I mean, let's go with that. What is a burnout?
Burnout is just like, I mean, I think, I don't know the definition. I'm not a professional, but to me, it's like, you know, when you feel it, you know what I mean? Like, it's that, man, I don't want to get on a call. Yeah. I don't want to do this, man. This guy's going to ask me questions and I don't want to deal with it right now. And that would be for me, that's when I get it, right? Like, I'm like, man, I don't want to hop on this call. It's like 12th call.
Yeah, your motivation's gone.
I was like, he's going to ask me about this and this, and I'm gonna be like, shoot. So that's what it is for me. Okay. You snapping out of it for me though. I'll take a break, like, or I'll just like hop on some sales training, dude. I don't know. I'm just weird though, man. Like, I don't get pumped up. I'm like very even keel, right?
So you'll actually do more sales training.
Well, yeah, just like, well, I watch a video. Like, I don't like
write. That's how I am though too.
But like, just write.
I don't want to be motivated. I want to learn practical skills. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, right.
I go do that.
Yeah, I go read my book and like Jeb Blunt. Yeah, right. Jeb Blunt's just like, do something. And I'm like, oh duh. And then I'm like ready for the call. And then I do it and it works out. But I'm the same way. I never liked pep rallies. I was like, oh no. Don't send me a video like that.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that you were homeless and all this, you know what I mean? And then you made it to the top. Because most of us in life, like, that's a cool story and I respect it. But like, most of us are not going to get to that point. We just need like, we don't need to hit the valley. We need to like stay on the plane.
Going from good to great.
I mean, that emotional intelligence, especially speaking to sales, that's key.
Yeah. Temperance. Yeah.
Like, man, I'm going to celebrate that I made the sales. Like, dude, you haven't had your commission coming yet. Is it in your bank account? Cancel.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a saying in the car business and that was like, don't count your checks until you see the taillights. Because if they, in Utah, anyway, it's a specific law, but like in Utah, you don't have to like, there's no 3 days or anything like that. If you drive off the lot, it's yours. So
that's the tail lights.
That's when you clap.
But not before that.
Right. Not before that. And then when you get back to the sales desk, your manager's like, hey, do you know when the best time to sell a car is, Bennett?
Right after
you sold the first one. Get your ass out there.
Yep.
And it's like, that's kind of hard. And like, there's definitely stuff you don't want to go too far with it, but that's kind of like the idea is like, you don't let
you build that. Anyways, you get that momentum.
Yeah. Momentum
does help.
There's a cool story about this that, I have an old Polynesian grandpa. He's crazy, man. But he used to say, like, in church, he would be like, you are where you're supposed to be. And, like, everybody would tune out because, like, that's, you know, the lamest thing that you could say when you go to church or whatever, right? Like, nobody listens at that point. But when I was older, it was like, yeah, no, dude, like, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Like, in this moment, there's nowhere else you're supposed to be but right here. And this is exactly where what you signed up for. And so, to me, that's comforting in good times and bad times when I screw up, when I have wins. Because it's like, no, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. Like, people get anxiety, I feel like. This is just my personal opinion. But people get anxiety because they're going through the storms of life or through the, you know, especially the storms of life. But they're going through these hard times and having anxiety about things in the future and depression about the past. Because they don't want to accept that whatever they're going through right now is part of their story. Mm-hmm. This is it. Yeah.
For me, I've seen a lot of that as well, of like forgiveness toward yourself. Like, mm-hmm. I made a mistake. Oh, now this person is going to do this, yeah. and now I'm going to lose this. And it's just like, have some grace for yourself.
So I've done over probably 300 hours of interviews with entrepreneurs. And we go through their story. Like, that's the first thing we do is how did you get here? Tell me your story, all that stuff. And 300 hours, 250 interviews, they all say the same thing. They give me their story, and it's all about like these lows, these low valleys, these really hard times. They felt like they sucked. They maybe did suck, right? And then we get to the end of the story, and then sometimes I'll ask, like, would you change that? And they're like, absolutely not.
No.
And I go, why? Because it's part of your story. Like, you, mm-hmm. but would you go back and do anything different? The answer is always 100% no. 250 interviews, 300 hours. Nobody would go back and do it different because they knew that they had to do that to get there.
Yeah. Yep.
You wouldn't be the same person.
Yeah. So accepting that, and that's what's really hard. Like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. I mean, so what is supposed to be me? I don't know what that means. So who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
This is where you're at and you have no control. Like, this is you. This is your life. And that's it.
Yeah. What do they call it?
And going from like, this is happening to me or this or that, to just like, this is an experience that's happening.
Yeah.
Well, man, that's like freeing. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, what do they call that, right? It's a funny, I don't know. I heard it a long time ago, probably inappropriate, but they called it masturbation. Like, this must be happening.
Okay,
right? Yeah. Like, this should be happening to me. It should be happening to me.
I deserve that, or I don't deserve this. And it's just like.
Right. It's like, it's masturbation, dude. Like, get out of it. It's not doing you any good. Like.
I've been really going down that of like, just like, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
And if you want to feel it is what it is more than you've ever felt it, I got a ketamine clinic down the street there for you, bro.
Hey, you know what? You know what that was for me though? I do jujitsu.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to hear about it is what it is, go to a jujitsu gym and go roll around. Like, so for me, I'm a girl dad. Yeah, I think you're a girl dad.
I got two daughters.
Boy on the way. Yep.
So, but like when you have your girl, it's like you're a girl dad, man. You just like, I became a feminist when I had my daughter. But like, this isn't a slight on anybody, but for my ego, it was going into a jiu-jitsu gym thinking I was like all hot and shit. And then the guy was like, yeah, you can roll. And he pointed at this girl who's a purple belt. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what jiu-jitsu was. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. Bro, she kicked ass, bro.
Oh, for sure.
She whooped it up and down. And you know what was cool? I was like, it is what it is. Because I was like, there's something sacred about, to me, this was cool because I was like, there's something sacred about getting your ass kicked. Because guess who doesn't have an ego after that, bro? All you need is some, like, I'm 280 and all I needed was some 150 pound purple belt badass to whoop the shit out of me. And then to be like, yeah, dude, you know what?
It is, yeah.
Get back up.
And then it's like,
it is what it is.
But once you experience those lows as well and you're like, meaning a low, like, oh man, that's embarrassing. Well, guess what? You're still alive, right? And then you're like, oh, it probably wasn't as bad as I thought.
Right.
You know, and I think that kind of goes full circle to the beginning of getting those rejection, right?
Yeah.
The more you're comfortable with those rejections or just awkward moments.
Yeah.
One of the books, The 4-Hour Work Week, Tim Ferriss. One of his activities that you do as an entrepreneur, you go to Walmart or Target or grocery store, a public space, you lay on the ground. You just lay there. And then another one is you're walking and you keep eye contact with people as long as possible. It's hard. Like
the most uncomfortable thing.
I do that at airports still. Like I remember within the last month and it is hard.
Yeah.
And even tells you like, oh, if it's a guy, you know, maybe they're gonna be like, what you looking at? You know, and he's like, well, just say, oh, I thought I recognized you. Sorry. You know, like he gives you like the out. But he's like, go do it. And you have to lock eyes until they look away first.
Yeah.
Dang.
Dude, gnarly.
I would hate that.
But what it gives you is the sense that it doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter that I look at this person until they look away. Nothing happened. I'm still alive. Yeah. I'm laying on the floor and everybody's judging me. Guess what? Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Right. And then you build up this, I think it's more self-confidence of like, man, I don't need the validation of these other people, or I don't care how they look at me if I'm a freaking weirdo laying on the Target floor.
Yeah.
I actually did it. I was doing all of his activities.
Why not? Like,
I would, and my wife's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, I'm reading a book, babe.
We did I had a sales manager when I was in cars. He was a douche, but one of the things that he did, I always tried to find the cool lessons in things people did. So one time he took this new sales guy who just thought he was like the shit. And the sales manager knew that there wasn't a deal there, but he kept leading this salesman on like there was. And he goes, all right, take this deal out to him. Uh-huh. And the guy goes, and the sales manager goes, just like I taught you, confidence, treat it like a baton, carry it out there, present it, smile, and watch what happens. And my sales manager knew. So this kid, all high, ready, goes out there. He's ready to close a deal. And the customer, like, it was way higher. And anyway, but he knew there wasn't a deal there. It was kind of a douche move. But the lesson was, this customer just yelled at this kid, just laid into him everything that he could, right? And the kid comes back just like distraught, like almost in tears, dude. It was kind of sad. But the sales manager said something really profound at the end of that. He goes, I want you, he goes, did that suck? The guy was like, yeah. He goes, well, I want you to know something. That's as bad as it's ever going to get.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not going to get any worse than that. Some guy standing up, yelling at you, crumpled up paper, threw it at your face.
And it's like done. And you're alive.
You're done.
Which is so funny because anxiety, I think it's always going to worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And then past it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think because like, yeah, I mean, I make a lot of my decisions by like worst case. And if like a good example of this is like money. So if I look at an opportunity and I'm like, I'm cool with losing all this money. If I lost it all, I'd be fine. Then I know it's a good decision to make because have you ever read the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson?
No, but I know it. No, I haven't read it yet.
You got to read it because the first chapter is don't try. So when you lose like this, it's called the paradox of control, right? The more you let it go, the more you get. And the more like you win and you move forward. But anyway, it's like don't try. So if there's no detachment, if you detach yourself from the outcomes and you can like confidently go in there being okay to lose everything, I mean, that's the first rule of negotiation,
yep.
Right? Is like, if you can't say no, it's a bad deal. Because another form of thought is like in your relationships, right? So you don't have expectations. Like me and my wife's relationship is not transactional. Like I do not like, it's not like I work so she cleans the house, right? Kind of thing.
Yep.
Like, and so if I work one day and she doesn't clean the house, I'm not angry or whatever you're supposed to feel if there's whatever.
Not keeping score or anything.
Yeah. There's nothing there. It's like, I wasn't expecting that because that's not our relationship. I'll clean the damn house, right? So how do you move forward? It's that paradox of like, so I just heard this. So the Navy SEALs do a training in the pool where they tie your hands behind your back and your feet. They tie your hands behind your back and your feet together. Mm-hmm. And then they throw you in a pool for 5 minutes and you have to make it. And so there was this Navy SEAL who was telling us about it, but he goes, people try to like fight and do the mermaid thing and they end up like drowning and they end up having like to get pulled out. He's like, the people who make it are the people who like let themselves sink to the bottom.
And just relax.
And push them up, push their feet up. And then they get up a breath of air and then they go down and then they push back up and they actually make it 5 minutes. So it's like,
How the hell do they hold the breath for 5 minutes?
Bro? No. They just like, they just go down and then push themselves. Like, yeah.
I swear they did that on that.
Lone Survivor.
The Ashton Kutcher video.
No, it's the Coast Guard video.
It's the Coast Guard video. Anyways.
So it's like, that's like, how did you win if you weren't doing everything?
A Navy SEAL is going to be pissed that we just compared the Navy SEAL
to Ashton Kutcher in the Coast Guard.
Sorry. Jocko Willink.
Yeah, right. My bad, dog. No, but it's like, you know, how did you make it? Well, you made it because, and I think you progressed because you're not doing everything that everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at the unconventional things because, right.
What a different mindset. My response to that would be, who cares?
Yes.
Who cares if you're not achieving at a higher level on a day-to-day basis? Do you feel more joy and fulfillment?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Because what are you going to do at achieving a bigger company or more money? Like, who cares? What is that going to give you?
Well, and on my website, so if you go to my website, daltonkjensen.com, you can look at the podcast, but I wrote a little article there that talks about this. Like, you don't realize, like, people, they have these crazy role models. They're like Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs. They're like, they look up to these people. And I go, and on my website, I wrote this. I was like, if I can almost 100% guarantee if you saw the life that Elon Musk lived, you would run
Elon
as far
says
as
that himself.
As far away as you could.
He literally and even, says this is a miserable life.
Yeah.
He sleeps at the office most
well,
of the time.
Well, and like, and so, okay, maybe Elon's, but like Warren Buffett, right? I'm sure if you saw his life, you would, I mean, could you imagine waking up one day, looking at all your accounts and losing $25 million in one day and mm-hmm. overnight? Like that would mess almost everybody up. But like Warren wakes up and he's like, oh, whatever. It's like, yeah. it's the roller coaster that I signed up for. So it's just yep. like, you don't have that. But like, but what about the guy next door? Like Bennett's right next door. He's living the life that you want to live. And, but you don't think that because he's not doing this crazy Warren Buffett stuff, right? You know what I mean? But you can go talk to him.
Yep.
And the last Warren Buffett charity auction to have 1 hour lunch with Warren Buffett auctioned out for $24 million.
Wow.
If you knew that, and I'm not, this isn't an omen, so like knock on wood, even though I can't, but you get it. But like, if you knew you were going to die on the way home, how would you act differently right now?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would do almost everything differently. And I'm
that,
like,
that
well,
that might be worth a knock on the wood right there.
Right, right. That but I'm just saying that, like, if you knew, so the question in Meditations by Marcus Aurelius is you could leave life at any moment, let that dictate what you think, do, and say.
Yeah.
So if you knew that you were going to die, and I'm not wishing that, but like, that's a reality, right? Like, you don't know how many, we all have an expiration date. We don't know. And I ask people that, they're like, oh, I wouldn't be doing this shit. Well, then what are you doing, Bran? Yeah. Figure it out, dude. Right.
Yeah. Start doing it.
Yeah. Start.
Don't wait till XYZ happens.
Yeah. You can have it today. You can have it right now. And like the crazy thing about all of this is like, and you know, you guys know this, but like, we are the answer. Like ourselves is the answer. Mm-hmm. Like I'm the answer to my happiness.
So what do you think is the biggest thing? I mean, if it's as simple as saying, don't wait, do it now.
Yeah.
What do you think holds people back from it?
Well, it's this idea that I have to be ready like for it. That's why I do the $5 challenge.
I think it's fear driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like, that's why I do the paperclip. So it's called the paperclip bigger, better challenge. And the $5 challenge is like, well, I'm not ready yet. Like I don't have the equipment to start a podcast. I don't have the cameras and the lights and the shit. Right. Well, you don't need it actually. Anchor will let you record it on your phone and publish it right there.
Yeah.
You know, a person who has an abundance of air doesn't want anything, but if you're drowning, you only want one thing. Yeah. So like you get to that primal state of like,
what matters?
I can breathe though. Like, so I'm good. You know what I mean? Like I got it. So anyway, I think that like we do, we look for external things. And even like, I don't mean to bring this up, but like a big part of my life, like I have two types of books in my house. I have like religious philosophy and history and then like self-help. But like, you know, we always search for things. Like we go to religion, we go to all these, I mean, that's why there's a million of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they all teach you the same thing. And that's just like, you're the only one. So, you know,
you're in control. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, I mean, if you believe in Jesus or not, like you've heard the story of the crucifixion and back in those days, like what, that was a thing, serious form of torture back then. What law did he break that would justify severe torture? Well, he was going around telling people that he was God, that he had the answer. And then he was telling, not only was he saying that, but he was telling other people that he would go around and he would say, you did this, right? Like you have the power to do this. And to the people at that time, that was blasphemy. But it's like, but we do though. You don't need all this crap. You know, you don't need the external validation. You got
not
it.
Not only that too. I've actually thought about that a lot. I'm very religious myself, but it's empowering when you tell people that they have the ability to become something greater than themselves. That's empowering, and it gets people to not follow the system. And where our country has been really primarily, a lot of the education system they say is based off of the Industrial Revolution, where people are taught to fall in line, people are taught to follow the leader, people are taught to follow
the
boss.
I'm scared about that.
It's dude, crazy.
Throwing my kids in school.
Education needs a big revamp.
Oh yeah,
I just met with a dude yesterday I went to high school with.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he's like, I had the most vivid memory of when I was in second grade, first week of school. And I'm like, I hated that. And he's like, I'm counting the weeks and the months that I have left.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have to do that for that long. And then because his daughter is in first grade and she's like, Daddy, I don't want to go for the full day. Like, that's too long.
Yeah.
And then you look at like what's going on with her mental health. And it's like, we just throw kids in a box
Yeah.
for 8 hours a day for the entire year almost, and
yeah,
then
crazy.
Give them cell phones when they're 8, and it's like, and nobody's really rethinking that.
Yeah. I think, I mean, dude, education's a big deal. I mean, that's why. So I actually, the reason it took me a long time to get that scholarship was because I had to fight for a different way to do it. Like, because the scholarship, right, is like, write an essay, send me a video, read a book, if I like you, all this shit. And I was like, no, but you don't get it. They were like, you can't do that. And I was like, but if you want my money, I can. First of all.
I make the rules.
First of all, I can, right? It's a golden rule. He who has the money, he who has the gold makes the rules. And I was like, and that's not entrepreneurship. Like, you can't write an essay about entrepreneurship.
Yeah, no, you gotta go do
it. You gotta go do it, man. And so it took us a while. I had to meet with like superintendents and principals and county board members. And I was just like, I was pitching this idea because I was like, you can't do this. Like, this is not an essay.
Yeah.
Just to be able to give your money away.
In the school. Yeah. And that was terrible because then you got to put it in like for a scholarship. It's actually easier to get than that if you're going to do a normal one. But yeah, then you got to put it in escrow.
Yeah. Going against the grain.
Dude.
Well, it's cool that you're doing it though.
No. But it's like trying to change the entrepreneurship though.
Yeah.
Trying to change the school system because like, you know, because you've heard that, right? It's like industrial revolution. And I go, yeah, but nobody maybe that happened in the old factories, but you never go 8 hours and then have homework.
No.
That's crazy. Do it there, dude.
Yeah.
That is it.
my dad's a mechanical engineer and he's all about the job security and never taken a risk in his life, never really done any investments. But I mean, my parents are very, very financially stable.
Mm-hmm.
He's done very well in his career, extremely well in his career. But it's just a different mentality. And he sees a lot of the stuff that I'm doing and he's like, I'm not even sure you're my son. Like, this is totally opposite from everything I would do.
Yeah.
What it comes back to, I look back on just the, really the willingness to take a risk, the willingness to think bigger, to dream bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, and I still have a ways to go on it. I still have a lot of areas to improve on it. It stems from hard things that I've done in my life, hard things. And by doing them, it's given me the confidence that I can do other hard things. Doing new, difficult things always increases that confidence. So my question for you is there one that sticks out for you? Something that you accomplished that gave you that level of confidence to take risks and think bigger on other levels?
Yeah, I think it was, for me, it was a failure. But it was my greatest failure and I'll never forget it. And it was awesome. Because I remember I was in the car dealership. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I felt like I was in school. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And so I was like, talking to a buddy, I was like, we need to go sell something. So it was so stupid. But, and this was back in like, early 2020. He was like, let's sell CBD. And I was like, all right, dope. Let's get it done. So we found actually a wholesale white label company here in Utah because, it's legal to do hemp, which is what CBD is made out of. But we dove head first, bro. I spent like 20 grand, something like not a lot. Like to me, it was a lot. I mean, that was like,
20 grand's a lot.
I mean, that was a lot to me. But you know, what's crazy is we jumped in and I was like, we're just going to sling this shit.
Yeah.
But guess what you can't do when you sell CBD? You can't do Facebook ads. Can't do Google ads. You can't have a Instagram or Facebook page.
What are you doing? Like walking the streets of West Valley, dude.
That's it, bro. We couldn't do any digital marketing, no programmatic ads. We couldn't text customers. We couldn't email customers. We had to have a merchant account from Europe and we went through like 4 or 5 merchant accounts.
Wow.
Bro, it was
so what ended up happening?
So we ended up, it actually ended up okay because we did that. So I learned about guerrilla marketing
for a while, right?
Yeah.
And you're kind of like,
we did guerrilla marketing. So we had influencers. We went to smoke shops. We went to, like wellness centers and things like that. And then we found a guy who was like, hey, I love the CBD. I love the brand because we made a nice little brand. He was like, I'll just buy it from you. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. He's like, well, how much inventory do you have? I was like, probably 30 grand retail.
Uh-huh.
He was like, okay, cool. I'll give you, he was like, I'm not going to give you 30 because you're not doing anything. I was like, that's fair. he was like, so I'll just buy your inventory for, you know, for like less than retail or whatever, but more than wholesale. So I think we just made barely like the money that we spent in there. But like, so that was cool. I guess it's an exit, but not really. I was just like desperate.
But you did. Yeah. But the point is you threw in your 20 grand.
Yeah.
You probably hit roadblock after roadblock after roadblock.
Yeah, I didn't even know what a merchant account was.
And then you're still here.
Yeah, I didn't even know what a merchant account was.
I don't know what a merchant account is.
I was like, what the hell? Oh, yeah, right. But like, I didn't know what a merchant account was. I didn't know that you needed a bank account. I didn't, all these things. So I was like, 20 grand's less than a bachelor's business degree.
Dude, that's so funny. That's
and
how
I learned everything.
That's how I thought of my solar. Like when I was like, if I lose all the money I put in this, this is better than a business degree.
Still cheaper.
And
still,
it was less time, which is more important than the money.
Yeah. And I learned more about that because I mean, that's when I learned about digital marketing. That's when I learned about branding. That's when I learned about accounting.
Which probably launched, I mean, was this before your podcast then?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that probably gave you some confidence to the podcast.
Yeah. I was like, well,
I mean, why wouldn't it, right?
Yeah.
A podcast is a business and you just did the other business.
Yeah.
Anyways, man.
Yeah. Cool. But it was cool. Like I was like, I'll learn more than college. It's cheaper than college.
And that's the mindset.
Yeah.
And changing that target of going to like, well, what did I learn? Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I couldn't control that. I was going to, I mean, maybe you can argue that you could kind of, you can only do what you do though, right? Yeah. You can't go back and then pass. It is what it is.
So. Right. Either like economists are like, so there's like financial, there's like the finance sector, there's the accounting sector, and then there's like economist sector, and they all count revenue different. Mm-hmm. And economic profit is different than accounting profit in the sense that it was this, right? Like if I do X, what am I giving up to do X? And that was it. Like, so I profited a lot because I learned a lot. But that was it for me, dude. I was like, that's when I gained a lot of confidence because I was like, not only did I learn, but now I know how to take an L and it actually didn't suck.
Yeah.
And we bounced back.
You lay on that Target parking lot. Parking lot. And,
that was it for me.
In the store, dude.
In the store.
Go do it.
Not in the parking lot.
Go do it. Don't tell your wife what you're doing though. Take it to Target and just lay there. But it's, that's not hard, right? Go do it though. It's hard. Right.
It's freaking hard.
It's hard, especially if you don't close your eyes or if you close your eyes. Either way, it's freaking awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know. How's
that? Something like that. But you know, I do comedy.
Yeah, dude.
Bro, that's the scariest thing in the world.
I freaking want to come watch you, dude.
We got to go to a show.
It's scary.
I asked you to invite me and I was
I haven't done it yet. I haven't done it yet because I don't do it professionally. I do open mic and you get 3 minutes. But man, if you want to learn about market feedback, like, Go bomb a joke.
Yeah.
Tell a joke that you wrote that you took like an hour writing. You're like, this is funny as shit. Go say it. And then nobody laughs, bro. Crickets, bro. That is embarrassing.
Dude, that scares the shit.
That is embarrassing. That's worse than I'd rather go lay at the floor.
Is that why you do it? To kind of get out of your shell a little bit?
Yeah,
do something,
dude, it's
uncomfortable.
Scary, bro. It's so scary because like there's immediate feedback. Like if it's good, they laugh. If it's not, and their people are mean, dude, they're drinking like, they paid money to be there. And if you're not funny, bro, they'll let you know.
I need to go. Me and my wife would have a blast.
Oh, Wise Guys is so funny anyway, dude.
How do we connect with you, Dalton?
Yes, it's easy. DaltonKJensen.com. That's where everything's
at. And the Thinking Podcast.
And the Thinking Project Podcast. Yep.
Thinking Project.
You can listen to wherever you want.
Sweet, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening in, everybody. Like, subscribe. Tune in for each episodes.
That's right.
That meant future.
Nailed it.
That's right, man.
You play that in reverse and it'll make sense.